Julie, how many spiders do you think we swallow each night while we are asleep?
Is this seriously your question to me?
Yes. I'd like to know what do you think. How many spiders?
Zero spiders. Not one spider.
You don't think we swallow any spiders?
No, I do not think so. I think that was a scary story to tell in the dark.
Yeah, okay. You don't have to worry. That's not what the episode is about today. It turns out that really was a myth, and we don't really swallow spiders while we sleep. But you know what we do swallow and inhale all day and all night?
Snot. Spit. Boogers.
Microplastics.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, good one.
What does the term microplastics mean to you?
It means more to me recently than it has in any other time of my life, because
Ooh,
I feel
please
like...
Please explain.
Well, because it's like come across my inbox and through social media a lot of like finding microplastics in placentas now and in your arteries and in your liver and in your fold in your underboob.
I did not find the study on the underboob.
Okay.
But yes, you're hearing more about them because we're finding them more in human beings and we don't know what it means. So today we're going to find out. So let's just do a brief overview of what microplastics are. They are plastic that's less than 5 micrometers in size. So that's thousands of times smaller than a grain of rice. And then there's actually a term nanoplastic, which oftentimes gets lumped into the microplastic category. And that's actually less than 1 micrometer. Richard Thompson, who is a marine scientist at the University of Plymouth, coined the term in 2004 after finding piles of rice-sized plastic bits above the tide line on an English beach. And then in the ensuing years, scientists located microplastics all over the globe, and this was my favorite quote, from the floor of the Mariana Trench, which happens to be the deepest part of the ocean, to the summit of Mount Everest, one of the tallest peaks. So they actually have found microplastics at the peak of Mount Everest. I don't know why they were looking, but they have found it. So the point is that they're kind of everywhere. Any thoughts on where we may come into contact with these on a regular daily basis, some things in your daily life?
Yeah.
I mean, there's an obvious one.
Food?
Yeah, plastic bottles and containers.
Right, exactly. I mean, things like that plastic. Hold food and water, yes.
So, but many foods and drinks, as you mentioned. Makeup? Personal care items, grooming products, toothpaste, face scrubs, clothing and textiles, everything for the most part.
Yikes.
Do you think that it's good for us?
I think it's about as good for us as what I'm distracted by right now is literally watching my cat eat my curtains. So it's probably as good as that.
That's amazing.
It's literally, maybe he's eating the curtains and there's nothing I can do about it because we're good live recording.
You know what's good about those curtains?
What?
Covered in microplastics.
No, they're not. I think they're just cotton, but you're not wrong. Yeah.
So dose and exposure, which we've covered numerous times in almost every episode we do, and especially ones in 2024 from me because of all the supplements I've liked to go into. But it says that, potential harmful substances are around us at all times. We're consuming things that if you were to have a ton of it, it would be bad for you. And low dose and infrequent exposure, therefore, don't necessarily have consequences. But the real question is, what about microplastics? So one thing is for sure, our dose and exposure is increasing and is only going to grow over the coming years. It is estimated that as much as 5 million tons of plastic debris enters the ocean each year. Consequently, the world's upper ocean currently comprises 24.4 trillion pieces of microplastic.
Ew.
That's the equivalent of roughly 30 billion half-liter water bottles. And its concentration might exceed 250 million metric tons by 2025. It's getting to the point where the numbers don't even have meaning.
There's nothing. There's not even an infographic you could show me that would... I don't understand that. That's too much. That's the entire planet to me. That's a whole moon made of plastic, not cheese.
Yeah. There was an interesting sequence from a National Geographic story on microplastics that I... as they tried to tell people kind of how they were consuming these things. And it started in 2017 when these Belgian scientists announced that seafood lovers could consume up to 11,000 plastic particles a year by eating mussels. Belgian people love mussels.
Okay.
So subsequently, a team in the UK at University of Plymouth decided to compare the threat of eating contaminated wild mussels in Scotland to that of breathing air in your typical home. And what they found was that people take in more plastic by inhaling or ingesting tiny invisible plastic fibers floating in the air around them. fiber shed from clothes, carpets, and upholstery than they will by eating mussels. So breathing is worse for you than eating mussels.
Yay.
And
but I love breathing. What the hell?
So it wasn't much of a surprise when in 2022, scientists from the Netherlands and the UK announced that they had found tiny plastic particles in living humans in two places where they had never been seen before, deep inside the lungs of surgical patients and in the blood of anonymous donors. Neither of those studies answered the question of whether finding the particles caused harm, but the warning sirens at that point were clearly going off, as you have already alluded to, in which we're finding these all over in humans, and therefore it's all over TikTok. Yeah?
Yeah, correct.
So needless to say, now is the time to maybe determine if exposure is potentially harmful to our health. So today, we see if we can answer the question, are microplastics harmful to my health?
I love it. Here comes my husband, by the way, to stop my cat from eating the curtains. Welcome to Your Doctor Friends, the show that teaches you to sniff out the garbage and answers all the questions that you wish you could call or text your doctor friend. My name's Julie Bruni.
And I'm Jeremy Allen, and we are two physicians who work at a nationally ranked practice and take care of some of the world's greatest athletes. We know that you have questions, and we want to help.
We want to be your doctor friends.
So, Julie, the reason I decided to do this topic was not because of social media. As you know, I'm well over a month into my hiatus and going strong. But it's actually because of a new study that was published on March 6th in the New England Journal of Medicine titled Microplastics and Nanoplastics in the Atheromas and Cardiovascular Events. So I think it is easy for us to assume microplastic exposure is bad for us, but to date, there is very little human data that exposure has actually caused consequences. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of research has been very association-based. These include examples where, like, they say microplastic exposure has gone up at really high rates, and so has Alzheimer's, and so has colorectal cancer in people under 50, and so has inflammatory bowel disease, and so has infertility. So, but clearly that's really full of confounding factors. iPhones have increased a lot over the past 10 to 20 years. Is it iPhones or microplastic that's causing all of these? You know, again, it's a correlation, it's not a causation. So
don't get into the, like, is 5G cooking my brain? We're not going into that down that dark alley. We're talking about actual things that actually might be hurting people.
Yeah, that's a May episode.
Okay, got it.
So, but in this case, the researchers in this study looked specifically at microplastics and coronary artery disease. They conducted a prospective multi-center observational study involving patients who were undergoing carotid endarterectomies for asymptomatic carotid artery disease. So basically in this procedure, these people had carotid plaque buildup, they were not having symptoms from it, and then they were going to have them excised, removed from the artery. So the surgeons collected the plaque specimens, and then they analyzed them to see if there were microplastics. And then they compared the total number of heart attacks, strokes, or deaths from any cause among patients who had evidence of the microplastics in the plaque compared to patients who had plaque but no microplastics. There was a total of 257 patients enrolled, and unfortunately, 181 of them had microplastics present, so vast majority of them. Any guesses on what they found, Julie?
A bunch of plastic.
Well, they already found that, but any guesses on whether it was worse to have it in terms of heart attacks, strokes, or deaths?
My guess is going to be yes, or else what's the point of this article? But yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that the answer is no, but I think the answer is
I would
is
hope
going
that they
be...
didn't know the answer going into the study, and if they'd found it didn't do anything, that would have been reassuring. But sure. Yes, you're aww. Right. Patients with carotid artery plaque in which microplastics were detected had over a 4 times higher risk of heart attack, stroke, and death from any cause at 34 months. So it actually went out almost 3 years. Mm. I don't know why they stopped at 34. Does this mean that microplastics cause more heart attack, stroke, or death? Capital no.
No. Correlation isn't causation, right?
Correct. Yeah. A lot of uncontrolled factors here. So, but it is concerning, for sure. What's your reaction to the study, Julie? What do you think?
No, I think the study is cool. And I don't know. I just love when people come up with novel ways of looking into things. And I would love to see in the end imagine if there was some interesting confounding factor where, like, people that are genetically more predisposed to having plastic in their veins also have this gene marker that makes you have heart attacks, and it has nothing to do with the plastic itself, which, again, very unlikely to be the case. But, like, sometimes that's what you get out of research, is that you find a third thing that you weren't looking for that actually is the reason why it's happening. But all of the crazy esoterics aside, I would say this seems to nudge towards some degree of causation. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's concerning, but I think what you said exactly is true. It'd be doing a subgroup analysis and saying the people who use Ziploc brand had a 5 times higher than the ones who use Tupperware brand,
right.
You know, plastics. And you're like, okay, well, I don't think that there's probably a difference in those risks. They're both plastics. So, right. The fact that it's there is concerning. The fact that people who had it had a higher risk is concerning, but again, still leaves us in the dark on whether that was actually the cause or not.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever personally worried about microplastics before? Does this come up in your repertoire?
Not until recently. And I worry about a lot of things. My hobby is creating scenarios that I can have anxiety about. And this has not been one of them until now. So thank you.
Yeah, the Your Doctor Friends community can always count on you for some worrying. So thank you. Let's spend a little time talking about what these microplastics are and how they may actually harm us. Microplastics generated from plastic degradation persist for hundreds and thousands of years in the environment. I'm going to list a couple of examples, and I want you to tell me how long you think it takes for it to completely biodegrade. Plastic water bottle.
You just gave me like 8 gabillion tons of this stuff, so I feel like the answer is going to be like 100 quintuple years.
How about million. A real amount of years?
Okay, fine. A water bottle. I don't know. I've seen ones that like look all smushy and gross that don't seem that old. 5 years.
A plastic water bottle takes 450 years to completely biodegrade.
Aww.
How about a disposable diaper?
Oh, God. Probably worse. You said 450 years for a water bottle?
Yes.
Oh, God. A diaper is probably worse. 1,000 years.
500 years.
Okay.
So worse, but not as worse as you thought.
Okay.
All right, one more. Plastic six-pack collar. So, like, you know, the plastic things that
no.
go in a six-pack that
turtles?
We used to find on turtles. Yeah.
Yeah. No, those seem thicker. 600 years.
Yeah, 450 years.
Another one. It's kind of like the water bottle. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So, but anyways, long story short is the actual form of the plastic biodegrades, but it's still there as its particles,
mm-hmm.
and it can take half a century for it to be completely gone, which is scary, thinking
yeah.
about how much of this stuff we use. I'm just thinking about like when we're in locker rooms and using plastic water bottles, because that's what they have for us to drink, and like
certainly
those are each going to be here for half a century, so that's good. Plastic additives used in the processing of plastic products make up a lot of the problems with them. So there's more than 10,000 chemicals that have been identified as a plastic additive, and 2,400 of these chemicals have been classified as detrimental to plant and animal life. So not a good start.
How many of those are in vape aerosol?
Yeah, you know, there is some overlap with vaping here, and not with all of them, but I did, as I was making this outline and doing this research, I thought to myself, feels semi-similar to the vape episode in a weird way.
You're breathing it in.
Some analogs.
Made of plastic.
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure. So these include plasticizers, antioxidants, UV stabilizers, dyes, and flame retardants, things that make the plastic do its job. Some of them are of serious concern, and we've discussed some of these before. There's alkyl phenol. There's polybrominated diphenyl ethers. Remember those?
Yeah.
PBDEs.
Mm-hmm.
Phthalates, which I couldn't pronounce the first time we had an episode, and then there
Good
was, and then there's BPA, which by bisphenol A.
That sounds about right.
I think it's bisphenol A.
Okay.
BPA is what we all call that. There's also heavy metals, chromium, lead, and cadmium are common ones. Many of these chemicals are known to cause health problems at certain exposures. And then in some rat models, microplastics have shown evidence to cause various metabolic disorders. That's what it's most famous for.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody talks about like thyroid and such like that.
Sure.
Intestinal problems, neurobehavioral changes, biochemical stress. So rats don't do great when they're exposed to this. But again, they're exposed to high levels, and it's very hard to follow that in human beings. So at this point, I think we've established microplastics are easy to consume, and they contain all these potentially harmful chemicals. But these are super tiny micro nano-sized doses.
Mm-mm.
So how is it possible to get exposed enough for a problem? This is where processes called bioaccumulation and biomagnification come in. These are called the Trojan horse effects of microplastics.
Ugh.
Never good to have a Trojan horse effect on probably anything. After being consumed directly or indirectly through the food web, I love the term food web, Microplastics accumulate in various body parts and are involved in biochemical pathways affecting cell functioning by crossing biological membranes in size-dependent manners. So, this is interesting. Studies have shown that microplastics of size 0.1 to 10 micrometers, so very, very small, can cross biological membranes such as the blood-brain barrier and even the placenta, brought up by Julie earlier, enhancing the possibilities of accumulation in secondary tissues such as the liver and brain. Microplastics less than 150 micrometers, so now about 15 times bigger than that, can cross the GI tract. And those less than 5 micrometers, so now smaller again, can accumulate in macrophages, which are our, you know, like Roombas of our body, who pick up all the debris and get rid of it. The cells can be carried in the blood circulation and then into the spleen. And then finally, microplastics less than 10 micrometers can translocate from the gut to the circulatory system and accumulate in the liver, kidney, and brain. So the point here, I think, is when you get down to the smaller smaller size of the microplastics and down into nanoplastics, we can actually absorb these versus just, you know, they go in and then they come back out the other side.
Got it.
So, like the collagen episode, can you actually absorb it?
Right, but at least collagen, like, our bodies have the capacity of breaking it down and then turning it into something. This just, like, either stays somewhere, or educate me if you want to. It just either lodges itself in parts of your body, like your spleen or your liver or your carotid arteries or whatever. Or, like, do we excrete these things? Do we pee-pee poo-poo them out?
You can definitely poo-poo it out. If it's in your body and it gets to your kidney, it have to be small enough to fit through the filters to get out. But
these,
if you're asking,
small,
can you process this plastic and make it into something else or smaller? The answer is no.
It either goes out through your GI tract or it stays somewhere.
Yep.
I hate that.
Bioaccumulation.
I hate it.
Scary, right? I mean, that's why they're finding it in people in these body parts, which is why people are terrified. So, again, finding it and it causing harm are two very different questions. Mm-hmm. So the real question here is, what are the potential health risks? I intentionally use the word potential there because there's little to no human study. Almost everything has been done on rats. And so in these rat studies, exposure to these chemicals have been linked to thyroid dysfunction, male and female reproductive system dysfunction, hypothalamus pituitary dysfunction, and then adrenal dysfunction. Basically all the endocrine things.
Yeah.
Endocrine stuff.
Yeah.
But in addition, there's also concerns for things like asthma and COPD because we breathe them in. But so far, all that's been found is that the particles can accumulate and be found in, like, the lowest, deepest part of the bronchioles. It actually can get down all the way to the floor of this little aspect of your lung, which is kind of crazy. But we don't know if they just sit there or if they cause, like, an inflammatory process. So is it just going to be, like, a lump of stuff that eventually can clog something if you get enough? Or is it actually going to cause a disease process, like asthma would be inflammation that builds up? So the major problem here, again, is dose and exposure.
Yeah. Real quick, and maybe this is dumb, but, like, you mentioned all of these chemicals that are in plastic or are used to make plastic plastic. What is plastic? What the fuck is this? What is this? What is it?
It's not a dumb question, but I mean,
there's some engineer chemist out there being like, you dork, it is... it's a substance. I just don't know, like, we call it plastic, but, like, I know there's different types of it, but, like,
yeah, so, you know, when you look in the back of your shampoo bottle and it has all those fancy, like, organic chemistry names?
Yes.
That's kind of what plastic is, not shampoo, but, like, it's a bunch of chemicals that are synthetically put together to create something.
Yeah. And, like, there are certain things that make it a harder type of plastic or a softer type of plastic or whatever. And to back up, and I don't know if you're going to go here eventually, so, again, sorry if I'm stepping on toes. Who's making all this, and where are we getting it from?
Who is making this plastic?
Mm-hmm. I have a guess.
Companies.
It's the petroleum industry. That's where it comes from.
They're highly involved.
Yeah, I mean, like, doesn't a lot of plastic have overlap, or it comes from fossil fuels and, like, the petroleum industry? I thought that there was some, overlap there.
I will say that that was not a huge part of my research, but what I will tell you is that the 10,000 different types of additives are not necessarily from the petroleum. And the interesting part here is that the plastic itself is not as much of the health risk as it is the chemicals that are used as the additives.
Understood.
The things that make plastic have its features in terms of, like, dyes and flame retardants and things that actually make it more into a plastic than, you know, like how do you take petroleum products and make it into a plastic feeling thing? Mm-hmm. Those additives are, you know, if you really want to put your organic chemistry glasses on, mm-hmm. the plastic itself has a very large surface area. So like even if you go down to a microparticle, the surface area at that size is still nice and large. And it's also relatively hydrophobic, so it likes to repel things off of it.
Yeah.
And so once you put these things into liquid or into something where the chemicals are going to want to find something more attractive for it, something that is easier for it to bind to, mm-hmm. they fall off easily.
Got it.
And therefore, plastic is almost the perfect, you know, transport for these chemicals.
Certainly. Okay, makes sense. And really when I'm saying plastic, it's not like a thing. It's plastics, which is like the whole...
Correct.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, the Mean Girls and Mean Girls call it the plastics. But yeah, like even just looking up very quickly, where does plastic come from? Like plastics Europe's, how plastics are made. They're come from natural materials such as cellulose, coal, natural gas, salt, and crude oil. So again, I think I just want to give myself some credit of like, I think that there's a lot of this that comes from
petroleum.
Fossil fuels. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Another reason to probably not like it. But
right.
And also how you classify your plastics. We'll talk about this in the last section.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, how to find it / avoid it. But, you know, you think about that recycling logo that's on your plastics, mm-hmm. and it has numbers in it. That's also sometimes how they're classified.
Mm.
So you can kind of know which ones are maybe a little bit, quote, better and worse for you based on those numbers.
Okay, cool.
So a little preview.
Thanks.
The rat studies exposed these rats to levels and frequencies that we do not get with microplastics. So there really is just no way to know with current level of evidence that we have whether this is going to do anything to us or not.
Hmm.
If we ever get to the level that these rats were exposed to, that's going to be bad. The question is will we get to that level with microplastics?
Sure.
Or cumulatively with microplastics and other things that we're consuming? But we're definitely going to need more studies such as the carotid plaque study and other things to understand how this affects humans. I found this quote from Albert Rizzo, who's the American Lung Association's chief medical officer, a nice summary. He said that the science is too unclear to draw conclusions. Are the plastics just simply there and inert, or are they going to lead to an immune response by the body that will lead to scarring, fibrosis, or cancer? We know these microplastics are all over the place. We don't know whether the presence in the body leads to a problem. Duration is very important. How long you were exposed matters. He says the most relevant analogy may be the decades-long effort to convince the government that smoking causes cancer. By the time we got enough evidence to lead to policy change, the cat was out of the bag. I can see plastics being the same thing. We will find out in 40 years that microplastics in the lungs led to premature aging of the lung or to emphysema. We don't know that. In the meantime, can we make plastics safer?
Yeah, definitely. The cat is out of the curtains. sorry, I had to. As my wheels are turning here, I think how I'm trying to wrap my head around this is that, like, these are chemicals that are of this age. And I'm trying to think of, like, well, like, historically, we are bombarded with stuff that... Our bodies have to filter out. Like, remember when we were talking about vaping and it's like you breathe shit in, stuff, you eat things, whatever, and it's fine. But I think the difference here is that those are usually organic carbon and, you know, like hydrogen and oxygen based forms that are simpler to some degree. Like what you breathe in is like, okay, maybe you breathe in, it's a bad thing because it's like soot or it's wildfire smoke or it's vape or whatever. But now you're in the world of like, different organic chemistry or inorganic chemistry. And I think the difference here is that, like, this is not stuff that our body has good enzymatic ways or cleaning, scrubbing Roomba ways of breaking it down. So, like, macrophages, like you just said, the little parts of our cells that are supposed to gobble things up and get rid of them, don't know how to get rid of this because it didn't exist before. And, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, parallels into other things where it's like, yeah, we breathe in stuff all the time and then our lungs filter it out. Or what doesn't get filtered out, it's like, you don't know, sometimes we even, like, wall things off in our body. We create granulomas, you know, like where maybe there was a little pocket of a weird fungus infection or something that your body never got rid of and it just creates, like, a little nugget Like when I'm sure at some point we'll probably have like a talk about like what are nodules? What are, you know, what are lung nodules or liver nodules, and should we freak out about them? And what are those usual things? And I'm wondering if more and more of them we're going to see in the future is going to be plastic balls.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's already been some reports that, you remember ground glass opacities, mm-hmm. which you would see on a x-ray, which is basically, you know, anybody who's seen ground glass, it looks like that on somebody's chest x-ray and is sometimes associated with specific disease conditions, that a new cause of that can be microplastics.
Ugh.
So again, is that causing harm? We don't know, but I think there's a likelihood that it's probably not good.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought you hit on some other great things there. I'm trying to remember what I was going to say before I thought of ground glass opacities.
Pneumocystis jirovecii? Pneumocystis pneumonia?
Does that do ground glass
yeah,
opacities?
Yeah, that's like one of the main ones it's that I remember back from in the med school.
You have your board exam coming up soon there, Dr. Bruni?
I have my sports board coming up this year. No, I mean, I was talking about, like, yeah, these are things that our bodies weren't necessarily, like, equipped evolutionarily
right.
for us to deal with, and that's why this is a problem, or is a potential problem, like you're talking about, because it's just sort of like, I don't know, what else acts like this that we get assaulted with on a micro level? I mean,
a lot
you could
of
make some parallels to, like, radiation or something, but that's not even the same thing, you know what I mean?
A lot of the things that we consume, and you did a good job of highlighting this, our body has a way of kind of almost like biodegrading it,
mm-hmm.
making it in some way that we can filter it out, and, you know, detoxing itself is all over social media because
yeah.
I need to detox.
Mm-hmm.
And your body does all your detoxing for you. But with microplastics, it's the equivalent of having a Roomba that grabs all the microplastics, puts it in the bag, but can never empty the bag.
Yeah, the bag just sits there.
And so it's just going to collect more and more. And you're like, okay, well, we need a new bag because this one's full. And you're like, you don't get a new bag.
Mm-hmm.
This is your only bag.
This is your only bag you get. This meat
so,
bag that you walk
you know,
around in.
What does that mean for, you know, if we get infected with something and all our macrophages are full of microplastic?
Oh.
You know, what does that mean if we get a lung infection and the bottom part of our lung is sitting with all these little particles sitting in there?
How you know. Likely is this? Please, please give me the... Tell me everything's fine.
I mean, I would love to tell you that everything's fine. I think you did a good job of having overall reactions to it. I can't tell you it's going to be fine. I would ask you the question after all this, do you feel like you'd want to limit your exposure to microplastics?
I don't think I can.
What if I told you you could?
Okay, then yeah, then I want to listen.
Yeah, so, again, I think the summary here is that microplastics are probably not good, but we also don't know necessarily that they're bad.
Mm.
And the best way to probably address this problem is to prevent it in the first place, to stop consuming and inhaling microplastics.
Put the cat back in the curtains.
Yeah, but those curtains probably have microplastic on them. So, but yes, the point is there are some strategies you can actually try.
Okay.
So I'm going to go through some of those.
Please.
You can try to limit your exposure to microplastics by drinking water using a home filtration system for tap water and avoiding disposable plastic bottles. Glass
okay.
and aluminum are better and more sustainable anyways. So stop using plastic if you can, and if you do, you know, the filters that are sometimes advertised for home, they actually do something, because if you get something that has, you know, a lot of times the filters will say how many microns,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, that they limit to, and I just told you that some of those, if you can get it so where it's getting down to those small, less than 10 microns,
then
you're not
going
to get microplastics into it. So
okay.
those are some things you can do. I think before I said micrometers.
You said micrometers. Is that not the right one? Micro
machines? I think it's probably. I think that's what micron is short for.
Is it really just Miss? Is it just Miss Frizzle in the bus? It's the
yeah.
bus full of kids.
I just
out
think it's
colon.
Funny because I think it is micrometers, but nobody calls it that. It's mic. I think they just call
is it
microns.
Micrometers?
I think so.
Micrometry.
Good stuff. Good stuff. You
look.
Can
this isn't a pronunciation podcast, okay?
If it was, we would have ended a long time ago. Every time I have to say phthalates.
You're batting 1,000 on this one so far, Jeremy.
When it comes to breathing microplastics, you can take steps to limit indoor air pollution that contains particles shed by carpets and furniture items made from plastic fibers. that air filter you bought in COVID, Julie, uh-huh. it still has a purpose.
Yes.
You can use it to get rid of micro plastics in your air.
You know what I could be? This is funny. I didn't buy air filters for COVID. One, I didn't realize until we were like a year into living in our house that, and we were still renting from our next door neighbors and then sold us the house, that you, how frequently you have to change the filter for your furnace.
Oh, yeah.
I learned that the hard way of like, why is the furnace not working? And it's because it's trying to push air through
soot.
Sludge. Yeah. And then we ended up getting an actual like air purifier when there was a big fire in the house behind us and it blew a bunch of smoke into our house. And then I realized that I hadn't changed that filter for a year. So I don't know how to get better at that.
It does help to change the filter. The other thing I will say is you're probably not going to be able to find an air filter that goes down to that micron level.
Okay.
But there are air filters that have carbon in them as well as some other... I'm blanking on the different types. But basically what they'll be advertised as saying is that they use like almost magnetic... The carbon attracts the bond to the particles and they bind to it. As I mentioned earlier, they like to bind to other things.
Yeah.
And so they trap by actually using... chemistry and physics, which is cool. So look for those type of filters.
Why don't we just get a bunch of filters that are just made from like human lungs and livers and kidneys, and that way that will trap all of the microplastics. Just like one big filter that is just a big carotid artery.
I'm pretty sure they would lock you up for that.
That would be Ed Gein, the serial killer's living room. Okay, got it.
That's Devil in the White City stuff.
Okay, understood.
So... But good news is if something like that happens, people will have evidence on this podcast of where to look first.
Just lock me up now. Yeah.
I also think that hopefully the focus on improving air quality recently will help lead to less microplastics in our breathing just because of the other air quality stuff, both with COVID, but then also with the air quality outside, with the fires. We've all been trying to upgrade our ventilation, both in businesses and restaurants and such. So hopefully that will help too. Some other strategies, and these are great. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to EcoWatch because I thought some of these were awesome.
Hmm.
Never microwave in plastic containers. I think most of us know that. But
some of us know it and still do a bad job.
Yeah, and I think if I can speak for myself here, I mean, most of the times I do that it's just because I'm lazy and I want to just get it over with. But I the negative consequences in my head are like it may melt the plastic a little bit. I never think to myself... it's going to harm me because microplastics are getting on my food.
Yeah.
So don't microwave in plastic because you don't want the microplastics. Here's one. Avoid to-go cups with hot liquid.
Yeah.
You know those paper to-go cups? Yeah. So the paper takeaway cups release microplastics when exposed to hot liquids. That means your morning cup of hot coffee taken in a disposable cup is adding to your personal microplastic consumption. Perhaps multiple times a day, depending on how many times you like that coffee.
What about, like, everywhere? Even, like, at my Starbucks?
So, the lining of most of these paper cups is made with HDPE-grade plastic. So, you may have heard of... there's different types of plastic. Mm-hmm. So, HDPE-grade is considered, quote, safe because it is meant to be food safe. Mm. But it has actually still been shown to leak estrogenic chemicals, and some even contain heavy metals. So, the point being is there are alternatives. So,
I know.
And it's better for the environment. So, if you can... you as often as you can, and nobody's perfect, use reusable cups. And most coffee places and places that have hot liquids will let you use a reusable cup.
Okay, but like, this is my reusable cup. It's made of plastic.
What do type of plastic?
Oh, let's look right now. Oh, God. Hold on.
Do you need readers? No?
It's just weird, like a weird degree of not enough light right now. It says 5. PP. BPA free. Made in China.
people may be familiar with that BPA free because that was a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, take BPA out of plastic. That's one of the additives that is known to have
issues.
If you throw a ton of it at rats, it causes problems. So, but again, they're not removing everything. Number 5, this leads into my next one. Avoid plastics 3, 6, and 7.
Mm.
They're harder to recycle. And they're full of more bad chemicals. Mm. Not to say that 5 is okay, but 3, 6, and 7 are the worst. In addition, ask your local businesses to switch away from these. So you may notice that you get a to-go container or something, and it has like a 7 or a 3 or 6. Like, approach them and say, listen, if you guys used anything but 3, 6, and 7, it's better for all of us, including our health and for recycling. And most of the time they can find alternatives that are not that much more expensive. So they probably just aren't aware.
Yeah.
Or they just made an economical choice because they were ordering in bulk.
Sure.
So I think it's a reasonable thing to bring up. To go back to your coffee cup, your plastic mm-hmm. coffee cup, I think it would be better if it wasn't plastic. I don't know if there's microplastic coming off of it, but it probably isn't awesome.
What do you drink out of coffee?
I have
like an Ember mug or something?
Ceramic is mostly what I have. Fellow makes to-go cups that have ceramic on the inside. Hmm. So they're metal on the outside, ceramic on the inside. Those are what I use. Or I use my Ember mug.
Because also, if my coffee gets cold when it's sitting in this cup because I forgot about it, I just put this sucker right in the microwave.
Yeah, so, okay.
I need help, Jeremy. This episode is for me.
Sadly, I'm going to have a new co-host somewhere down the line.
My carotid arteries are too full.
This was an interesting one for me. The laundry. I think people are aware of this because some of these products have become more popular, and we actually have one of these products for microplastics, but... You know those athleisure materials we love so much? The ones that I'm wearing in my pants, at least right now.
What's in your pants?
Hang on now. What is in the material of my pants is the athleisure. You know, like that really stretchy poly, yeah. Like the stuff that like wicks and whatever.
Yeah.
Each item made from these materials releases hundreds of thousands of microplastics per wash, with acrylic fibers releasing more than 700,000 every cycle. A 2017 report found that a whopping 35% of all microplastics that enter the ocean come from synthetic fabrics.
Aww.
Better materials are wool, silk, and hemp.
Hemp. Interesting.
Here's what I'll say. I know that I will not be able to rid of all of these from my wardrobe. No. I think they may make up about 90% of my wardrobe at this point.
Sure.
So there are some other things you can do. Installing a fiber-catching filter in your laundry machine will keep microplastics from washing out when the water's drained. It'll keep it in your washing machine.
Okay.
An external microfiber filter is vary in price and size and can reduce the amount of fibers in the wastewater by about 80%. So it's pretty good.
Okay.
You can invest in a microfiber laundry bag. There's a popular one called Guppy Friend. It's made from a fabric similar to fishing line that doesn't disintegrate when washed. The bags trap microplastics to keep them from washing away with the wastewater. Guppy bags.
Cute.
Guppy Friend bag, I should say. And then this is the one we have. There's laundry balls called there's one called the Cora ball. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Mm-mm.
It looks like it's a round sphere, mm-hmm. and it has a bunch of like almost, you know, when you blow bubbles, mm-hmm. the end kind of has like it's a stick, and then at the end it has the serrated edge, you know, at the end of it, like a bubble wand.
Sure.
It's like almost a bunch of those put in coming out of into a ball shape, like a sphere shape.
Okay.
And the Cora ball keeps microfibers from breaking off of clothes in the first place, and then collects those that do so they can be properly disposed of. So basically this Cora ball will eventually be covered in plastic and you then throw it in the trash.
So you it's reusable, you just like smoosh.
Yeah, you just throw it in the wash.
Kind of like
every
you're like emptying out your lint trap, but you're doing it on the surface of this what sounds ball. Like a coronavirus spiky thing.
I would go get it to show it to you, but then nobody else would be able to see it. So,
when you throw these things out, though, like, I guess it's better than it just going directly into the water system. But like, you're throwing them out you're throwing them somewhere else. It all just goes. It still exists on the earth. It's just in a better place. It's not in your lungs and spleen.
You make a good point.
Is not really supposed to be like, what's the point of anything? Because that just sounds depression.
No, it's a good point because you're right. If you throw it in the trash, it ends up in a landfill, hypothetically, and then that could still end up in wastewater. So I will interestingly do more research after this to maybe see what they say about that. I'm sure these companies have addressed that, but still probably, as you mentioned, still better than it going right into the wastewater.
Sure.
Because the water supply is the most readily access we have to this. Also, maybe avoiding hurting all our animals.
Yeah, and it's also not going on your clothes, which is then like, now I'm taking the laundry out of my dryer and I'm breathing in laundry air and I'm putting my clothes on and then those microplastics are like smushing around. The problem that I have, and again, like, I don't mean to be picking this apart too much, is like, okay, like, so now it took off, it helped my garment not shed so many microplastics. But by basically what you're telling me is the clothes I like to wear are microplastics. So, like, does it matter if I wash them good, better? Like, they're still on my body all the time.
It does matter because the only way you can consume them is if they are shed.
Shed, okay.
And so that actually leads into my last laundry point. Air drying clothes reduces microplastic production, mostly because the tumbling action in the dryer reduces strength of fiber, so more shedding occurs in the wash the next time. Most of these synthetic stuff, like these athleisure things, people, they're not recommending drying anyways, but it does do better just to hang them up because then you don't reduce the strength of the fibers to increase more shedding the next time you wash them.
Okay.
So, but yeah, if they don't shed, you're not going to breathe them in. So, Understood. Interesting. The last one, and my personal favorite, was support policies that seek to limit single-use plastics. Because I think this is a public policy thing more than anything.
Oh, 100%. As many of our episodes end of like, well, and it's also the same thing about like, even just the whole pollution and recycling and let's save the planet movement. Yes. Every single decision that you make that is more sustainable and reusable is great. And I will never not tell people to do that, and I will never not try to do some of those things myself. But we all know who the real bad players are and who's really creating the climate crisis. Is it Jeremy not cleaning out his guppy bag? No.
It's a guppy friend bag.
Sorry. That's the most important part.
Right.
Yeah.
Plastic water bottles are going to exist whether your doctor friends in our community stop drinking out of them or not, unless they are regulated away.
Right, exactly. And I think, putting the screws on the big bad players, I don't know how to do that other than not talking about it.
Well, there's a lot of analogs here to the vaping episode. So we just did this vaping episode, and the summary was that the data is early and it's concerning, and it seems like a couple decades from now we're going to be saying vaping caused a lot of harm. After this episode, I feel like this is very similar. If we keep going at the rate we are, the dose and exposure is going to, it seems, rise to a point where we're going to see harm. It seems like we probably already are to a certain extent. I think this is the scariest type of harm, in my opinion, because this is the one we can't predict. We have no idea what it's going to do. So, like, it's much easier to wrap your head around this can cause harm, and we know what harm it causes. We have no idea what harm this can cause. It just feels like it's definitely going to cause harm. The other thing, though, is, and just like you mentioned with the vaping episode, like, especially with policies to try to keep it out of kids' hands and policies to try to regulate it, this one's preventable. We don't need plastic to survive. Like, it's not life-sustaining in any form or fashion.
Yeah.
There are also safer forms of plastic that use natural safe additives that biodegrade in less than half a century.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of smart people who have started companies where they said, instead of using this crappy additives that literally kill rats when we give it to them, we can make similar additives using natural, organic, safe products that biodegrade that don't cause harm to us and still form something that feels and acts like plastic. I don't think we should be using plastic at all, but that's still better.
Yeah.
We need to regulate out the use of plastic.
Yeah, I agree.
It used to be, and we've referenced this before in this episode, it used to be, stop using plastic, you're killing turtles. They have those little necklaces on, and, you know, actually, all you have to do is just cut slits into that thing if you don't mind. You can still throw it away, but just...
Don't stop using it. But just
you
cut
can just
it.
Cut slits.
Yeah.
But now I think it's pretty apparent that this plastic may be coming for us.
Yeah.
Like, this may end up killing us. And I don't know. Last thoughts from you?
No, I think you're right. And I think in the end, it can feel a little defeatist to be like, well, okay, like, I personally can make choices, especially because I have the financial means to purchase things that might be a little bit more expensive up front, but maybe one are reusable, so I will get return on investment from that thing eventually. But like, clearly this shit is made because it is cheap to make it and somebody's making profits off of it. So in the end, I don't know, can someone somewhere who has more power than I do decide that it matters enough to the health of the individuals on this planet and the planet itself to not just make more shit we throw away that has a bunch of poison in it because it's cheap and because you get to make money next quarter?
It finishing sucks. every episode ever with
of anything. It's just sort of like, I get it. It's just sometimes you think my brain tries to wrap around it, kind of like wrapping around the concept of how much microplastic or whatever the hell you said was in the ocean, 12 gazillions. And it just goes, oh God, I don't even know what to do about that. I can't even get my cat to stop eating the curtains. So, you know, I got to pick my battles. But I do love, all silliness aside, I do love that you gave me some actionable items and things that I will literally go get a different coffee cup. I probably won't do any of the drying things. Those seem too annoying. I'll be completely honest with you, but I can minimize and use less disposable plastic shit. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I think, again, we'll put that link in the notes, that EcoWatch that has avoiding microplastics at home, that is really, really helpful. But even just awareness is fantastic. Googling, understanding plastic, understanding microplastics, the awareness of how it affects you on a daily basis is half the power. And then I think the other part would be is taking some action for both yourself and your loved ones. And then the last part would be is, you know, voting matters. And it may seem like nobody can get anything passed anywhere, but maybe something like, we should stop using plastic and causing microplastic to harm all of us is something that is nonpartisan, and maybe they can pass something low that could help. So I don't know, ask your local people, ask your local politicians, have them put in restrictions on local restaurants. I mean, the local stuff is important. Yeah. So, you know, no plastic in your local businesses, and all of a sudden there's no plastic in your, and it grows from there. So, I don't know. We have more power than we think we do. We just don't have it at a national level. We have it at a local level.
And I'm also a goldfish, and so sometimes things change and I don't pay attention that they change. Like, I mean, I live in Chicago and you get charged for every reusable or non-reusable bag, you know, every plastic bag that I get, you know. So that eventually, it took me a couple of years, but like most of the time I will bring my reusable bags to Target or to Mariano's or whatever, and I'll be like, "Oh good, I saved myself 7 cents." And I also didn't have a whole bunch of crap that I'm just going to either try to recycle or forget to and throw away. And that's, for me, again, makes me feel better that I'm not just actively trashing the planet, but it also means, okay, less crap to end up in my, I was going to say placenta, but I've never had any of those and I don't plan on having one. But I do have carotid arteries. I have a heart, too. I got one of those, so I don't want it to end up there.
Yeah, or what did you say, under boob?
Yeah, I don't want it in my underboob either.
All right. Please subscribe and leave us a review. It really does help. Yeah. And also sign up for our monthly newsletter, Pulse Check, when it comes out at the end of each month. You can do it at our website, yourdoctorfriendspodcast.com. Julie, death to plastic. Listen to your doctor friends.
Yeah.
The amazing music is credited to SkillCell with Pixabay licensure. The podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast should not be taken as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Please consult a medical professional for any medical issues that you may be having. The contents of this podcast are the opinions of the hosts only and do not reflect the opinions of their employers or affiliations. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Under no circumstances shall Dr. Julie Bruni or Dr. Jeremy Allen or any guest to the podcast be responsible for damages arising from use of the podcast.